Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, so we're in a weekend where the NBA playoffs see a dramatic comeback by the Clippers by beating Oklahoma City. And Donald Sterling sits down with Anderson Cooper. And in the process, to his credit, seems to make things worse. Where the Stanley Cup playoffs roll on and the Penguins were up 3-1 are now 3-3 with the seventh and deciding game tomorrow night. Where the NFL draft is going crazy. Highest ratings ever for the NFL draft. Where you have Johnny Manziel on Thursday and Michael Sam being drafted on Saturday. And the text I get from Kevin is, oh my goodness, we have to get Vince Welsh on the show. Did you see what happened at Indianapolis? Really?
Yeah. It was a really exciting Grand Prix of Indianapolis with a very controversial start. Now, is it as big as the NFL draft? No. Is it as big as the NBA playoffs? Well, that's debatable. Is it as big as the Sterling interview? No, because as you said, he found a way to make it worse.
This is the text I get. I mean, that wasn't like a short. It was...
Oh, no. It was a paragraph text. I mean, I took some data there.
It was emotional. At least the part that I got to was.
It was a great race. I enjoyed every minute of that, by the way. I mean, by the time the third round rolled around, I was starting to lose interest a little bit.
Well, I think there are very few people in America that watch every pick. Now, you get interested. You look at that. I mean, what happens is you tune in, you look at the bottom.
I got the scroll. Yeah, I could watch the scroll.
Yeah. You know, who'd the Steelers pick, who'd the Eagles pick, which Penn State players went. Okay.
And ABC had the scroll going on at the bottom of the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Oh, this just in, Marco Andretti has found 6 miles an hour faster in 24 hours. He's now the fastest car on the track at Indianapolis this so far for the 500. That's breaking news. All right, now on to the NFL draft.
Yes, let's do something now to attract listeners. All right.
Let's talk about the draft.
Steelers, your team, I think did really well.
I think they did outstanding, considering the fact that they had a lot of needs. They were one of the few teams, I thought, in the draft that actually fulfilled, or at least drafted to fulfill, every need they had. Corner, wide receiver, defensive line, offensive line. All those needs were addressed and then some. Now, whether everything pans out or not, that's a different story. And they even got a tight end in the seventh round. Now, I don't know how many seventh rounders historically have made the team on opening day of their first year, but...
Mixed bag.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. When you have an opportunity to pick up somebody that's a future need, I think that's the opportunity to do it at pick 230, and they did that with Branch Flower of the tight end from Massachusetts. Nice size, 6'4", 256.
Well... I think the Eagles' seventh rounder is going to stick, Bo Allen. I like him a lot. Out of the Eagles, Marcus Smith gives him a rush end, big plus. I thought Jordan Matthews was a great choice at two for them.
No question. Especially at pick 42.
Yeah, hardworking. Go get the ball kind of wide out. Certain teams did very well in the draft. The Raiders had a really good draft.
Well, the Eagles were another one of those teams, Steve, that filled all four needs with their draft. Corner, linebacker, wide receiver, and safety.
Well, I don't want to say they filled any of their needs. I don't want to say the Steelers filled
their
needs.
Okay, they drafted to fill their need. How's that? They haven't filled the need until that player becomes a starter or at least a fill-in in that position. You're right. But they at least drafted and attempted to fill the need. Not everybody seems to do that.
Well, it depends. I mean, who didn't do that?
Although the Texans, I thought, had probably the best draft of anybody, they did not draft a linebacker. And I thought linebacker was a need.
Well, I don't think it is.
I mean, quarterback's a need. Lines a need on both sides, and they handled that very well.
I thought the Raiders drafted well. I thought Jacksonville drafted very well.
Jacksonville, I thought, drafted really, really well, especially with that second-round pick in picking up Lee from USC. I think that's a
Lee really and Robinson good pick. Lee and Robinson both.
Well, yeah. Well, of course, you know, Robinson's still around at 61. That was a value pick right there. There's some value in that pick.
Mm-hmm. So, they got Lee and Robinson to go with Bortles. They don't put any pressure on Bortles to start right away. And I think they drafted well.
Actually, was it the GM or was it the owner that said that he didn't even want to see Bortles on the field this year?
Well, he can say it if he outperforms the other guy's playing.
But the Jaguars are another team that I thought had a lot of needs. Quarterback, linebacker, defensive line, wide receiver, offensive line, and I think they did a nice job of addressing all those, too.
I mean, the Browns had a really good draft. I thought the move by the Bills and how they drafted, they had the most interesting draft of anyone. The Watkins pick, trading Stevie Johnson. The Bills staff drafted like a staff that threw all their eggs into the 2014 basket. And with good reason. With very good reason. They know that for the first time ever, there's going to be a new owner of the Buffalo Bills. And there is a possibility that the new owner of the Bills will do what Jimmy Haslam's done in Cleveland and what they've done in Jacksonville. New ownership comes in, cleans house, and puts his people in place. So I think what they did was they did everything that they could to get into a spot, to draft Sammy Watkins, to throw everything into the E.J. Manuel basket, and basically say to any new owner with success, hey, look, we've got them on the right track. Look at what we did. That's how Buffalo drafted.
Well, I think they definitely gave Manuel some help. They put some players around
him. Yeah. They didn't care that they no longer have a 2015 first-round pick. Because they, as a staff, have to have doubts as to whether they're the staff drafting in 2015.
They were also a team, though, that, and I agree with what you're saying, everything, but they were a team that didn't fulfill every need or at least attempt to fulfill every need because, as you said, their mindset was completely different.
It's totally. There's no long-term outlook for them. Everything they did was short-term. Now, what's interesting is that I think that division, for the first time in a long time, is wide open. For Miami, Buffalo, and the Jets, I think that division, for the first time in a long time, is wide open. And New England had a rather odd draft.
Yeah, well, you know what amazed me? Of all the things that they need, and there was a lot of needs there in New England, they didn't draft a tight end.
I know.
For as much as they used the tight end, they didn't draft one.
I know.
Now, the Garoppolo pick, I mean, that may pan out to be a very good pick in two, but everything after that was like, huh?
The whole draft was, huh? Easily at one who has two torn ACLs.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, before the ACL, he might have been a top 30.
Oh, no doubt. Outstanding player.
But now I'm not sure he was the 29th pick. But, you know, it's Belichick. Belichick will do what Belichick wants.
Garoppolo at two? I don't know.
I really don't know.
I don't know what they were doing.
I sit back and wonder, a team that loves using the tight end and has had so much success with the tight end that did not fill that need, just that amazed me. I figured tight end would be first or second pick for as often as they use them.
Well, they'd probably, now look, if there's a tight end, if there are tight ends on the board I don't like, I don't pick them to pick them.
Well, all right, you make a point there, but you mean to tell me in seven rounds you couldn't find a tight end that fit?
Well, there's a tight, if I look and there's only one or two tight ends that I like and they're gone, I'm not going to pick another guy. You know, you can't just pick the pick. That's why you have free agent. When you grade a draft, you have to grade a draft based on the combination of what you got in free agency with who you drafted. That's how you judge it.
How do you feel about drafting kickers?
No.
See, I even in the seventh round, Washington did this, drafting a kicker. Zach Hocker from Arkansas.
Yeah, well, Arkansas, I'm sure he had to kick a lot.
But, you know, well, let's talk about the Redskins draft, because the one thing I noticed in watching to round three, what was their main goal? Protect their quarterback. They got a 6'6", 314 guy in Moses at offensive tackle, and then picked Long from Nebraska at 6'5", 320. Their whole goal is protect.
Spencer Long was a great pick in that spot. Great pick. I've watched enough tape on him the last 2 years. Great footwork, good upper body, plays with some attitude. That was a really good pick for the Redskins in that spot. Really good pick. All right, you talk about the tight end. For example, the Steelers got Rob Blanchflower.
Right.
Hey, look at Blanchflower, okay? I mean, you're right about the size and the whole thing. But he's not a great athlete. Doesn't get off the jam very well. And is not a great route runner.
But maybe he's the number two in a short yardage and he's a blocker.
Well, I mean, this guy can be a good, scrappy, wide tight end. That's the one that's closest to the line of scrimmage.
Right.
But most people look at him going into this draft that he would be a team's number three tight end. Not what you wanted to hear.
I still like the draft, and he's big.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I would like to thank every member of the Purdy family that works in that office for the tremendous hospitality and the great success of the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. It is a must-go-to event for this guy right here. Thank you to all the Purdys. What a great group, what a class office that is. By the way, in my family, a little notoriety last night. On America's Funniest Videos, my cousin Deb was on the show as one of the 9 finalists last night.
Really?
Yes, my cousin Deborah Penny.
That's great.
Was one of the 9 finalists. She won $10,000 last week.
Sweet.
Spent 2 weeks out there and the whole deal, her and her family. Now, not everybody could stay the whole time. Her husband, Mike, had to go back eventually because he had to go back to work. But she is about... she is about as sweet and as nice as, and I'm just thrilled for her, that you know, they get to spend that time. They didn't win. I guess some cat that bedevils the mailman in the mail slot every day won, and I saw it, and I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, she was on the show last night. Got this wave high, her and her family and the whole thing, which is nice. So I was really thrilled for her. Really thrilled for her. So yeah, she's been on the show the last 2 weeks.
Best thing I have is, I was just going to say, the best thing I have is I have a dog that barks at the Cialis commercial, or at the, Cialis commercial, the one that has the guitar riff in it. I don't know why, but that guitar riff, whether you play it on the phone, for off of YouTube, or on TV, he goes nuts. Ain't worth $10,000, I can tell you that.
We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf. No more talk about the Cialis commercial. Let's bring in Greg Pickle from Fight On State. Greg, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Steve, glad to be back as always. Thanks for having me on.
Any nuggets as you've gone through the caravan deal and the get to know James Franklin situation, not just for the fans, but for the media as well? It seems like there's a little bit more that comes out every day about personality and so forth. What have you learned about him?
Yeah, you know, I've only been able to make the state college stop so far, but obviously there's been a lot of, you know, 5-6 reporters at each stop. So you've been able to sort of piece the picture together. And I think what we've found so far about James Franklin, just reading all the different accounts, is that he can answer just about anything you throw at him, and he usually has some sort of coherent answer for everything. I mean, I think that's one thing that really stands out about James Franklin, whether he's talking about, you know, potential upgrades to facilities, whether he's talking about academics, whether he's talking about recruiting a specific area. He's incredibly good at narrowing his focus and narrowing the message to, you know, the desired outcome. And I think that with that, he's able to, you know, maybe give a little bit more than Bill O'Brien was in the past, who kind of was very broad at times during these events, whereas James Franklin sort of narrows it in very well. So I think that's one thing we've learned. And I think the other thing is that just, you know, his personality is such that, you know, he's very easy to communicate with, both for fans and the media, and I'm sure the team as well. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, if there was ever, I don't think there really was a reason for it, but if there's ever any doubt about that, I think it's certainly gone now after he's been on 4 or 5 stops here, the coach's caravan. Of course, they get rolling again tomorrow, that this guy is a very good communicator, and it's not just recruiting, it's in every aspect of the running a football program. And I don't think that should be lost in the fact that, you know, he's making, you know, 3 stops a week, because I think that's a big takeaway from this. I really do.
There's been a perception for a long period of time that Penn State has great facilities. I don't think there's any doubt Penn State has really good facilities. Yet he made a point about upgrades that are needed to get it to SEC standards. What were your thoughts when you heard that?
Well, you know, I think it's a very interesting thing. And when you look into what he said, and when you look at SEC field, you know, the one and facilities, the things that really stand out, you know, branding. He talks about that a lot. I believe he mentioned it specifically, if not, I'm sure he would if asked, because when you look at these SEC buildings, you know what they represent, what they are. And at Penn State, they're more sort of modern. I mean, you see the Aluba Hall sign if you go in the back of last, but I'm not totally convinced if you drove in, you know, totally unaware of what Penn State football was, that you would be aware that that was the football complex if you were behind the bushes and the gate was locked. I mean, I think that there's some facial upgrades, if you will, that could be done to just make it more personalized to this Penn State football, and that's where you're at. So I think that's something they would look into, that sort of has that SEC mindset. We know Bill O'Brien spoke about the idea of eliminating one of the fields outside, and then he sort of found out that it was actually a benefit. So I'm not sure we're looking at that so much, but it seems a lot of it is, you know, I believe he mentioned James Franklin did a hole, some holes and couches in the facilities and whatnot.
Yes.
So it seems more, you know, appearance-wise is what they're looking at, which I'm sure every program everywhere could use that, and Penn State's no different, whether it's been publicly expressed before, you know, the last couple of weeks or not.
Well, let's get to the branding part of it. Because
you know,
I've always felt, to me, that inside Haluba Hall, let's start there. You walk in there, and it's two practice fields. I've always felt that you need to take advantage and brand it. I'm talking like let them know how many Big Ten championships you have, how many national championships you have, and I mean include all of them, right? Now, Beaver Stadium is more difficult. College Township has a signage. I mean, the reason there's no signage on the back of the scoreboards is College Township. Okay? Pure and simple. It is College Township. Okay? So don't sit there and think it's Penn State or he's going to wave a magic wand. It is College Township that has kept the back of the scoreboards, for example, putting any branding on there. So there really is a mixed bag as to what they can and can't do.
You know, I think Haluba Hall is interesting, and it's funny that you mention that because I have mutual acquaintances that a daughter that plays field hockey, and they came up to Haluba Hall for a tournament, totally unaware, outside of the region, you know, not overly familiar with Penn State football. So I walk up to go, to go see the daughter play, and the dad says, well, you know, what do they do here? What is this place besides where they, you know, host field hockey tournaments? And I think, you know, it's not something you think about. You know, you explain that it's the place where the football team practice and sort of go on your way. But I think that you make a good point, Steve, that, you know, if you're not immersed in Penn State football, you very well may not be aware of what some of these buildings are that are related to Penn State football. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly the message that James Franklin's trying to drive home. And, you know, you're right. There are some limitations, some administrative tape that limits some things, but others it's just a lack of not being done. And I think we'll see those things get done with James Franklin in charge.
I remember when they pulled the old AstroTurf out of Haluba Hall. They replaced it with field turf. I had said to somebody there, I said, why don't you take it and cut it into 2x3s and sell them as mats? I said, after all, the 1986 and 1994 teams practiced on that field. They never did it. They rolled it up and threw it into a garage. Yeah, that stuff I don't get.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just me. All right. Draft over the last few days, plus the signings. Carson ended up signing with Arizona, Gress with the Steelers, and Gilliam with the Saints, with the Seahawks. Okay, so that's six guys. Your thoughts on how it played out?
I think it played out just as we thought it would. You know, I do think John Urschel went a little bit earlier than I think a lot of guys thought. I believe he had a seventh-round draft grade from NFL Scouts and CBS Sports, so I do think he probably went a little bit earlier than many had expected. You know, Allen Robinson dropped a bit, but so be it. I think that, you know, he was there was always a lot of receivers in this class, and I think he was just as likely to go earlier than he did to go when he did. So I think that probably makes a lot of sense. I'm not surprised that Glenn Carson was quickly locked up. I mean, even if he doesn't have all the measurables to end up being a starting middle linebacker in the NFL, he certainly has, you know, the determination and the drive and the measurables in another sense to play special teams and maybe start his niche there, similar to Mike Zordich did last year before he injured his ACL. So I think it played out just like we thought it would, you know. Jones went off the board early in the fourth round. That went as scripted. Robinson went on the first day. The second day. You know, that was that went pretty much as scripted. And, you know, some guys have signed. You know, there's obviously a couple that still haven't. Matt Lavin, you know, some of those guys that are still out there looking for homes. But for the most part, you know, Gary Gilliam has immense potential. Whether he realizes it or not, you know, we'll find out over the next couple of months here. But, you know, he had the chance to probably do something with Seattle, and I think he believes he has the chance to do something. Adam Gress will head to the Steelers mini camp. And, hey, Mike Farrell went that route last year. And I believe he most recently got cut by Denver. So,
yes.
Obviously, he was banged up a little bit and got cut by the Broncos. But it seems like that's not a bad place to start, of course. So I think that, you know, I don't think there are any surprises. I think that what we expected to happen happened, and we'll have to see, you know, once these mini camps and summer camps get going, where some of these guys land. But Robinson, Jones, and Urschel, other than Urschel going a little bit earlier than maybe some expected, really wasn't a surprise.
In recruiting, Penn State has locked up, what, 16 verbal commitments so far.
Right.
It's been rare when Penn State's had double digits locked up at this particular time. It's happened before, but it's been rare. What are you seeing with what they are doing in recruiting that impresses you?
I think it's just the idea that the guys at the top of their board are the guys they're getting. Brandon Wimbush, the quarterback out of New Jersey, top target at quarterback for a long time, both under Bill O'Brien and James Franklin. They land him. You know, Adam McLean, a guy they really paid a lot of attention to under Bill O'Brien, James Franklin and his staff put similar emphasis on him, the defensive tackle from Maryland. They land him. You know, when you look at successful recruiting classes, it's not always a matter of where you get guys. You know, Sterling Jenkins, if you got him, the tackle from four-star tackle from Baldwin out in Pittsburgh, if you got him now or you got him in February, you'd be thrilled as a football program. But you, because you're getting the guy at the top of your board, and Sterling Jenkins was a top tackle on Penn State's board for the class of 2015. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, if you're going to be a successful recruiting class, yeah, you have to get guys locked up and keep them. And, of course, the earlier you do that, the better chance you have of doing so. But at the same time, if they're not the guys at your top of your board, it's sort of moot because you're obviously not getting what you believe to be the best players to help your team going forward. Penn State's done that so far, and almost all the guys they've taken have been top-of-the-board guys. And if you do that and your evaluation's right, you know, you're in for success down the road. And it's not to say that Penn State's, you know, not been able to do that in the past, but it's certainly they've done it at a rate so far here in 2014 that has far surpassed anything that they've done much in the past.
All right. And now, what numbers-wise, if it stays where it is, and we don't know if it's going to stay where it is, but if it stays where it is, Penn State will be allowed 80 scholarship players next year. Now, the max they could sign is 25, obviously. How many can, based on your numbers, can they sign if the numbers stayed at 80 and no one left?
We're holding steady. You know, we've been holding steady about 20 right now. If no one leaves, you know, if no one leaves, they'd be at around 17, I think, would be the number they could get. But, you know, expecting a few guys naturally leave, as it happens every single year, whether it's at the end of spring, whether it's at the end of summer, whether it's after the season, you know, usually you have a couple guys go. So we're sort of sitting on 20 right now, barring no NCAA changes. Of course, you know, if something would change there, they would have more room.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, 20 is sort of the number we're expecting. And, of course, they're at 16. So now you see what happens. I mean, now you have to see what your biggest needs are, how long you can wait for guys. And where it gets interesting for Penn State now is that they've got a lot of the guys that were not only at the top of their board but ready to decide. Now we're at the guys that are at the top of the board but aren't really planning to decide until after their senior season. Why is that good for Penn State? Well, because they will have time to assess where their numbers stand and see what they have to do to fill any additional spots they may get or see what guys they can take once they have the numbers figured out. So I think Penn State's in a good spot right now. I think you'd really be hard-pressed to find them a better spot. You know, they obviously still would probably like another tackle. They'd probably like an outside linebacker if it fits, and another offensive tackle as well. But until they get their numbers on firm ground, I think you – if you're a Penn State fan, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better class and a class that meets expectations at this point in May anywhere else in the country.
Finally, Greg, what is this is the off-season. What is your off-season like?
It slows down a little bit. I mean, it ebbs and flows. You know, a lot of it now is draft-heavy. Then it gets into the summer camp circuit, and that's really one of the things that sort of, they sometimes go unnoticed because people are on vacation, they're not reading as much. But, you know, the camp circuit is where we are really able to get an eye on kids. I know there's contention by all sort of sides about recruiting rankings and stars. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm sure from a publicity standpoint, schools like to claim they're this number, that number, have this many, this star, and that, and whatever. But at the end of the day, they don't matter. But it is nice when we're able to put a name with a face with these kids like we're able to do when they go to camps, including Penn State's in the summer. and other camps around the country, whether it be Nike or what have you, and just sort of get an eye and see what these kids are actually able to do, and sort of get a feel for why Penn State evaluate them. So I'm going to travel in the summer, you know, heading to a 7-on-7 next week at Westchester, probably a Nike camp sometime in June. So a lot of travel in the off season, seeing some recruits, and you know, just keeping tabs on things. Obviously, this summer will be a little bit different considering Penn State starts its season in Ireland, but yeah, nothing too far out of the ordinary. Pretty same old, same old.
Well, if you run a great 40 time at the Nike camp, let us know.
I will do that.
Greg, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always, and your insight.
All right, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you guys soon.
That's Greg Pickle, Fight On State. ESPN's draft coverage, the sixth highest rated program of the year. By the way, what were the other five?
I'm going to guess Monday night football games.
Bowl championship series, bowl championship series, bowl championship series, bowl championship series, and bowl championship series.
Well, I had the right sport, at least.
ESPN and ESPN2 drew 2.8 million viewers for rounds 2 and 3 on Friday. NFL Network had 1.2 million. It's a 3% increase for ESPN over last year, a 16% increase on NFL Network. And the two standouts, without a doubt in my mind, happen to be Bill Polian on ESPN and Mike Mayock again on NFL Network.
That's the reason I watched NFL Network, was Mayock.
I mean, just, I think, brilliant. We'll come back. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Let's see. Oh, there we go. Oh, here we go. That's what I was trying to do.
And down go the ratings. All right.
That was the song I was telling you about earlier. It wasn't Cialis, it was Viagra, just to be, you know, correct. Dog goes
fabulous.
Nuts.
Okay, great.
Dog goes
great.
Nuts.
Fabulous. Your dog goes nuts over? That goes.
He does.
Okay. Great story in the New York Times about how the Clippers were sold to Donald Sterling by John Branch. Great piece of work. Irv Levin, who had owned the Celtics in the 70s, told the Sun they were going to a lunch. He then acquired the Buffalo Braves, San Diego Clippers. So in San Diego, they're losing fans, they're bleeding cash. They had acquired Bill Walton, Walton had a broken bone in his foot. And they're losing. Well, he'd been the former owner of the Celtics. He wasn't used to losing. He's going through a depressing time, Irv Levin. Wife Michelle had been killed in a car accident. So he decided he wanted to sell. And you know who he thought he had a deal with? He thought he had a deal with a guy by the name of Phil Knight.
I've heard of him.
But there was a dispute between the two that ended up in court. So then he decided to meet with this investor in Los Angeles, Donald Sterling. How about that? Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Kevin analyzes each pick of the draft next hour.